does he specialize in knee tremblers?
Can we change the knee tremblers to the name of the podcast?
Actually, almost anybody in England would know what you meant if you used it.
Ken, I want you to call one of these movies a knee trembler. Just one of them. Justin Sowler.
You are. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Okay. And that makes me Ken Hankey.
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. And I see you're not delighted to meet me, so.
I've met you before.
Yeah, well, you get to be my age, you forget these things. Who am I again? Never mind. Together. Together, we are
Elitist Bastards.
Yes. And we haven't been to the movies because there weren't any movies to binge.
I was going to say I thought I went and watched something.
You didn't watch anything. You may have, but it wasn't. It was on your own time. It was extracurricular activity of sorts.
That's loud.
We'll discuss that in the program, in fact, since obviously you had a confession to make to me about coming up with a worst list. That tells me there's not enough bad cinema in your diet. In any case.
No, there's enough mediocre.
Oh, well, we'll find you some bad.
I just watch boring shit.
No.
I don't get to watch bad movies. I just get to watch...
You could have seen Yogi Bear. You could have definitely seen Marmaduke. Fine. But you told me you were going to quit if you had to see Marmaduke.
It worked, too.
It worked, yes.
I didn't say anything about Yogi Bear.
That's true.
You volunteered that.
I volunteered Yogi Bear because I'm waiting for you to have to do the Smurfs. So, anyway.
We'll see.
We are, nonetheless, we are still Elitist Bastards, and we have a special Elitist Bastard program for you featuring...
All singing, all dancing.
All talking. In any case, we have our special Best of, Worst of edition... in which we get to tell you what we think the best pictures of the year were and the worst pictures of the year, and you get to yell at your computer or iPod thingy or whatever it is.
I mean, we'll probably change our minds by the end
By the end of the, maybe by the end of the show, we may not like these as well. So, but in any case, that's what we have this week, since nothing at all opened in Asheville this past week. Speaking of being in Asheville, however, we should note that we are where?
In Asheville.
Yes, but where? Where
the
are
Carolina,
we?
Carolina, Asheville.
That's right, we're in the Carolina. In
the Cinema Lounge.
That's right.
Located, well, it's located within Carolina.
Yes.
But the Carolina is located within...
Asheville,
yeah. I was going to say Skyline. I call it Skyline, but is this not an actual...
I don't think Skyline is a real thing, is it?
Yeah, I call it Skyline.
You call it whatever you want.
Well, that's what I call it. I just did. Since it's the beginning of the year, just past the end of last year,
yes,
we have our best of.
This is our best of, yes.
And our worst of.
And our worst. And,
where should we start? I guess in the...
We should probably start with our... best film.
How are we doing this exactly?
Give me my set, and you have your set.
Half of my set's on yours.
Well, I know that, but we don't need my worst list just yet. And I can remember number 10. Okay. Yeah, this is act reasonable now. Do you want to work forwards or backwards?
Well, I don't know.
You want to do your 10th? Best film of the year.
My 10th best film of the year.
Yes.
Was The Extra Man, which is also on your list.
Yes. But in a slightly more exalted position.
Yes. Which was a film I liked a lot, and I thought it was very funny.
I thought it was very funny. I thought it was very touching.
Yeah, it is. You know, surprisingly so.
If it had just been funny,
it wouldn't.
No, I don't think it would have made any impression on me at all. I mean, it's one of those rare films that, well, I haven't read it yet because you gave me the world's hardest novel to read for my birthday, and it's I'm almost to the end of it now, and I may never want to read anything again. But
then don't. I won't give you his really hard book.
No, please don't.
Because you will be exhausted.
I'm already worn out. But anyway, it made me order the book.
Right.
That The Extra Man was based
on. Which I'm curious how. I'm reading a Jonathan Ames book right now, which I like, but I don't. From what I've seen of his later stuff, it's. I don't know how I like it, but I like Jonathan Ames. So. Which is part of the reason why I like.
And you see, of course, the flaw with this entire process is that we have now discussed one of my films at the same time, so we only have to name it later. So that actually acts as a time saver.
Okay.
And
what's your tenth?
My tenth, I believe, is yes. It's
oh, right. It's on this page.
Yeah, thank you. That's a.
I am love.
Okay. Yes, I thought that was it. It's not on my.
You
sheet.
Said you could remember.
I
what it was.
Thought I could, and I did, but I wasn't. I want to be sure. Which is an Italian language film starring Tilda Swinton.
Who is not Italian.
Who is not Italian, who
is
speaking.
Sure what she is.
Speaking Italian. I think she's English. Speaking Italian with, she says, a Russian accent, since her character is supposed to be a Russian who has learned Italian. Now, I personally cannot tell whether that's Italian with a Russian accent, and I doubt that anybody listening to this can either. And if you are, figure out a way to prove it to me, because I would like to know how you can tell this.
Ask a Russian
Italian. Ask a Russian Italian. Well, for all of you Russian Italians listening in, explain to me how you can tell that she's doing a Russian accent. Anyway, it's...
She says, what a country, in Italian.
Oh, okay.
That's how you know.
Is that what it is? Okay. In any case, it's a very good film.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surprisingly successful film in Asheville, much more than I would have ever thought for the type of film that it is, and the fact that it has subtitles. And parts of it, let's put it this way, instead of being my 10th favorite film, if the whole film had been like the climactic 5 minutes of the film, it would be my number one film. But unfortunately, it's not. Still a very good film, but it didn't make it out of the number 10 slot because of that. But it is definitely worth your while. If you haven't seen it, you should.
Going to number 9.
Going to number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
It's Micmacs. Micmacs.
Micmacs are all the way down to 9.
You're yeah.
Sick bastard. Okay. Well, go on and say something about
it. I'm
not
saying this is definitive.
Okay. Well, go ahead and say something about it.
I liked it.
Yeah, so did
enough?
I. No. I want more.
It's your typical Junet film. It's very stylish and
clever.
Has that green color.
Yeah. But it's not a murky, dirty aquarium type green. No.
And it's sort of, I guess, because compared to like silent comedians and stuff.
Yes.
I guess. But it's a very French film.
It is because it's made in France.
I know, but
by
it's...
a Frenchman.
But if you're like... If someone in France was going to make a movie...
Yes, they should make this movie. It would be like this.
French. That's what I'm saying.
But even for a French movie, it's very French.
Yes,
okay. That's what you're actually saying.
It's the most French of the French films.
Yes, well, this movie is also on my list in a much more exalted position than number 9. Number 9. Number 9.
What is your number 9?
My number 9... is Nowhere Boy.
Okay.
A film that you haven't seen.
No.
A film that almost nobody locally saw because the Weinstein brothers, with all the brilliant judgment for which the Weinstein brothers are known, booked the film into the Bowcatcher. Nothing against the Bowcatcher, but they have a really horrible history with art titles or off-the-wall titles, anything but mainstream titles, they do not do well with. It's very rare that they have had a successful run of anything other than a mainstream film. Crouching Tiger and Pan's Labyrinth might be the only ones I can think of. This was a movie that cried out to be at the Carolina or the Fine Arts, and instead it ended up at the Bowcatcher, lasted 2 weeks, and then died. And it's a really good film about, essentially about how John Lennon becomes John Lennon. The fact that
probably knee trembling.
Yes, and that well, possible. Actually, I don't think there's actually. Well, I guess it kind of is.
No,
wow. A knee trembling experience in this. Knee trembling, which is a phrase or a term that I have just taught my friends here. It appears to have become the word of the day.
It's like Pee Wee's Playhouse. Steve's gonna start yelling whenever we say it.
Oh, that'll be entertaining. Yes. In any case, I thought it was a very good film. I thought it was a very moving film. I thought it was a very well-made film. And bear in mind, I am both a Beatles and a John Lennon fan, so
are
I
you?
Am somewhat biased. Yes, I am.
No.
Don't
I didn't
act
know.
Surprised like you never heard that before.
Who are the Beatles?
Bite me.
No. It's rude.
But you're
keep
rude
a professional
to turn it
down. My number 8, which you'll also get upset at me about and probably fuss, is... since we're going to number 8.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well.
It's The Ghost Rider.
Yeah, that's way too low.
Right. Well, the thing... it hasn't stuck with me as much as I would like it to have.
Well,
so,
I've seen it more than once, and that might have some bearing. But I saw
it's a
long time since I saw it that second time.
And let's be honest, if it's not number 1, most of these things are... sort of
the
order.
Yeah,
it's like you got in. Good. Okay,
you're on the list, you know, count your blessings.
Right. Because that's what they're worried about. It's
Polanski is really worried about where he lands on our lists. Don't worry, Roman, you did better on mine.
So, why did you... do you want to talk about The Ghost Rider?
Yeah, well, I thought it was a... not only I thought it, within its own confines, I thought it worked perfectly well as a thriller, despite the fact that a lot of people seem to think that it's illogical.
Well, my thing is how... and it's sort of how I mark a great director. It's like, you can take the last couple of Cronenberg films. They're pretty straightforward sort of thrillers. But there's nobody else that could have made that particular movie... in that particular way. With Ghost Rider, there's nobody that would have looked at that material and made it in that fashion.
And made it something that fit in with the rest of his oeuvre.
Yes.
And that also became, you know, he looks at this and goes like, wow, this is like The Tenant. This is like Repulsion.
Yeah.
This is like Cul-de-Sac. This is like Chinatown. I can fit it in with the rest of my stuff because it's really all about the nature of identity. And still turning out a thriller at the same time. That I think is what's kind of remarkable about it. And after his perfectly fine Oliver Twist, which has the problem of being Oliver Twist, I think it's...
well, there's also that Harrison Ford movie. That was a while
ago. That was a good while back. I mean, there were a couple decent...
I'm just saying he's had some downers.
Yeah, well, you know... of course, he had to flee the country, and that kept him from making Day of the Dolphin, which was probably one of the better things that ever happened to him.
No.
So, in any case, that's your number
8.
8. My number 8 is your...
number 10.
Number 10, which is The Extra Man. And since we've already discussed that and how I bought the novel but haven't read it yet, we don't need to discuss it now. So we can move right along to your number 7.
Which was The Town. I don't know if you ever...
around to watching The Town, especially after you said that although you wanted my opinion on it and you thought I might like it, you knew it was not a top 10 movie for me.
No. And I think why I liked it was because it's just...
and actually, you are one of the few people that I would accept that statement from.
What?
That it's not going to be top 10 material for me.
Well, I know.
But
I've known enough people who've tried to convince you to watch stuff, and I've known right off the bat that...
well,
you're
usually you have
like
to
it.
Back me into a corner to make me watch something. You know, like you have to get me to program The Fall to make me watch
right.
it. And I'm glad that people did. But
suggest
you know.
Romeo and Juliet, the Lerman one, at some point. Yeah, so you could watch it again. I know you've been trying to.
Yeah,
but this
has been sitting on my shelf for years.
A decade. Yeah. Anyway, so
close to.
We have the town, which, as far as crime thrillers go, is very good. It's surprisingly intelligent in the way it handles its characters. It's got this usual, I don't know what Hollywood's obsession with white trash Boston is right now, but it's got that, but it doesn't.
Well, yeah, I think what it has to do is the fact that they, you know, they're tired of doing dumb Southern rednecks, so right. Now the woods
New
are full
England.
Of dumb Massachusetts rednecks.
Right.
And, you know, it's not the only film this year that has...
No, The Fighter. And
The Fighter is also Massachusetts redneck, working class, and Conviction. So, I mean, you know...
The Departed.
Yeah, but The Departed was actually really good.
Yeah. Well, The Town
and
the
Fighter
is very
good. You know,
so.
I mean, The Fighter's good, it's just not great.
Maybe they're on to something. What's your number seven?
My number seven is The Secret in Their Eyes, which right. You rated somewhat higher.
Yes.
At one
how
point,
dare you, Ken?
How? Yeah. Well, what can I say?
Which
you know?
We were discussing where the director, for some reason, cut his teeth in television.
Bad television.
Yeah, it's not even like
crap.
Like Law
television.
And Order.
Yeah.
Not good.
And yet he's made this absolutely brilliant film.
Right, and it's there's nothing about it that's not. I mean, the story you could see maybe being the plot of a television show.
Yeah, but not done this way.
No, but it's very cinematic, extremely cinematic. And it's got a couple of... they won't be iconic because it's a foreign language film, but...
Yeah.
The whole soccer stadium
yes,
sequence
should be.
Is brilliant. And there's that one little scene in the elevator that's
yes.
pretty much perfect.
And there are several things. And the performances are
right.
really top-notch. So
very
I mean, this is and that was actually also an unusually successful film in Asheville for mm-hmm. being a foreign language film. And when it opened, nobody had any thought that it was gonna
do what it
did. I mean, it was like, yeah, we'll open it, but it won't do anything. And Fine Arts opened it, and lo and behold, people came to it, and they kept coming. So you know, you never know.
Well, I think Neil at the Fine Arts once said that if the title's in English,
yeah,
got a better chance.
Yeah, so that's probably true.
You trick them, I guess.
Yeah, well, but I don't even know if I saw a trailer. But I mean, there is. I've always give high marks to movies that don't play this game, but there is a tendency to make trailers for foreign language films.
And the thing is, you can always tell that they're
yeah, where there are no dialogue scenes, so that you can't tell.
But then you see it, it's like, there's all these Asians in it.
Yes. And I'll bet they all speak English.
Anyway, so we're going to number six.
We can go to number six, and your number six is?
Is Mother.
Mother was on my list at one point.
Right. And I think the thing about Mother is that it's an odd little movie. I don't think it...
Well, it's definitely odd.
I don't think it... And it never meant to be odd. I just think it's the sensibility of
just
this sort
is.
Of Asian.
Yeah.
Speaking of Asians,
it's particularly
Asian.
Korean. I think
right.
you know. I mean, you have to
but
make
it has this. I've always had a disconnect with Asian film because
yeah, I usually have a problem with them. I usually
just because they're the cultural idea of drama from at least what we get in this country is very different than what I am used to or like.
That's probably true, and that's probably also why Americans tend to like Kurosawa, who is probably the most Western of all right. Japanese filmmakers, better than they like the more obscure but thought more highly of by connoisseurs of Japanese cinema filmmakers.
But in this case, it's...
This case, the cultural difference is actually part of the
right.
appeal of the film.
Mm-hmm. And it's, but yeah, there's, it's very universally human.
Yeah, yeah, there are things about it that I completely understand.
Yeah.
I don't look at it and go, why are these people behaving in this fashion? I understand why they're behaving in this fashion. So, and that is a large problem with me, with a lot of Asian cinema, is, you know, why are these people doing this?
Right.
I'm sure it's explicable to them, but to me it's just absolutely strange. But it didn't make my list. It was at one point. At one point it was fairly high on my list, as a matter of fact. So going to my number six
yes.
now? Well, my number six is the Coen Brothers True Grit.
Right.
Which is obviously
my number two.
Oh, well, there you go then.
It was almost my number one.
Well, so. I would have had no qualm about that.
Right. But I think it's the movie, even though it's not my number one, I think it's the movie I just purely enjoyed the most out of anything this year.
Well, it's certainly a highly entertaining
right.
film.
I think it's
and,
the one...
And it's a gorgeous film.
I think it's the one I'll end up
watching
more.
More. That could well be. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what on here I have... What's still left on this list of mine that I have... already seen more than once, and the top four I've already seen more than
right.
once, so
but for me at least
yeah.
And I like the fact that it's, even though they've taken this, it's a straightforward western.
It is,
but again, it's only the Coen brothers
it's very much their film,
even though I'm assuming from what I understand all of the it's straight from
yeah,
the
someone's
book.
Supposed to loan me the book when he finishes
right.
it
one so
of our, one of our AFS members, in fact.
Right. So, but they, all the dialogue's delivered in their own, like...
Coen-esque
yeah,
ways, yes.
Yeah. So, I can see why they wanted to make it.
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. And, oh my God, is it so much better than the 1969 film, which I imagine you'll probably have to take my word for.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. What's your number... Wait, yeah, that is
my
your number six. What's my number five?
You're number five
it's
now.
Scott Pilgrim, which was never on your list.
It was never on my list, but it's on my also-ran list.
Okay.
I have no problem with you having it on a list. I'm glad somebody does, in fact.
Okay, good.
It just isn't going to be me. The Michael Cera factor is too strong.
I don't care anymore.
I do. He annoys me. His existence annoys me.
Well.
He needs to be painlessly destroyed.
See, I refuse to let him ruin a good movie. That means he's won, Ken. You've given in to Michael Cera.
No.
But
it means that the Kool-Aid is starting to work on you.
No, I hated him. And now I just don't care anymore. I don't have the energy to give a shit about Michael Cera.
Well,
so,
I think we've probably seen right. close to the last of him anyway. So.
Possibly.
Because regardless of what you think of Scott Pilgrim or what I think of Scott Pilgrim,
yeah, it, didn't do
it pretty much tanked.
Well, that's a movie I can see getting a sort of cult following. Because apparently they had it forever at the Bruin View.
Yes, they did.
And
they
so,
kept selling out.
Yeah, so I can see it catching on. I don't know what that means for him, but we shall see, I guess.
Maybe he'll end up with one of those Macaulay Culkin-like careers. Playing
maybe.
Small, quirky
too
roles.
Too old to be a Macaulay Culkin.
Not anymore.
Well, maybe Jason Bateman.
No.
No.
Okay. Jason Bateman has the advantage of being actually good.
Okay. What's your number five, Ken?
My number five is Black Swan.
Okay. Which I had higher.
Which you had higher.
Mm-hmm.
I had it higher at one point. And, you know, to me this is... kind of like a Polanski film on speed. It's
right.
it's.
Well, I said PCP.
Okay. Well.
So. Because it's extremely tense movie.
It is.
Especially the end of it. That whole last.
Yeah.
The whole staging of Swan Lake.
Yes. Well, I mean, the whole thing about it is though is that what gets me about it is, and this was true of the first 5 minutes of the film, was it's like, wow. If ballets were like this, I'd like them a lot better.
Right.
Because there's nothing that'll get me out of a room quicker than a ballet, as a matter of just general...
Michael Cera.
My Michael Cera.
In a ballet.
Michael Cera in a tutu. That would get me out of a room very fast.
My number four is Secret in Their Eyes.
Oh, okay. Well, we've already discussed that, so we can
What's
move
your number four?
Right along to my number four, which is Mick Max, which we've also already discussed. So we can move right on to your number three.
Let's do this, Black Swan.
Yeah, well, there we go. Now, my number three is a film that I don't believe is even on your list.
Right.
And that is The King's Speech, mm-hmm. which I thought was as close to a perfect entertainment as you are going to come.
And I think that's my problem with it.
It's too perfect.
Yes. It doesn't get me excited in any way.
I am so leaving that statement alone.
So, I have nothing. If it wins every Oscar on Earth, I will be perfectly...
It won't, because The Social Network is going to do this for reasons I will never understand.
Depress me, Ken.
I know, it's depressing, but...
But King's Speech does. I will have... It can have the greatest reputation on Earth. I won't have an issue with it.
It didn't get you moist.
No.
So...
It did not.
Well, I'll accept that. It's a terrific, terrific film with a terrific Colin Firth performance, regardless of what you say. And you didn't actually say that wasn't the truth.
Yeah, that's what I agree with.
So what's your number two? Yeah.
True Grit.
True Grit.
Right.
Well, my number two is The Ghost Rider, so we've pretty much gotten rid of that.
And now we come to number one.
And then number one, which is the best film of the year.
For both of us.
I don't give a shit what anybody else says. And that is Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island. And we arrived at this independently. I had no idea that it was going to be your number one film.
Well, I went back and forth.
You probably had an idea that it was going to be mine, because it has been for
the year
since February of last year. And nothing has come along that has quite knocked it out of the box.
And my reason that I ended up with it, because it was between that and True Grit, was that even though it's been around all year, it's still the movie I've ended up discussing with people the most. And people that don't like it want to talk about it. People that do like it want to talk about it.
I don't mind when people who don't like it want to talk about it.
But no, I think there's something
to that. As long as they
want to
talk about it in something other than a really stupid way, which I've had a lot of people want to talk about it in a really stupid way.
Somebody that said they didn't like it because it wasn't what the trailer led them to think it was going to be. It's like, that's not the
trailer. God forbid they saw catfish.
Yeah. You know. So, but that was sort of what... eventually put over the top, because it is sort of it can be read in so many different ways.
It can be read in a number of different ways. There are so many influences and so many cross-references mm-hmm. in it that I'm fascinated by it. But I think the biggest thing for me about it is the fact that it's been almost a year since I first saw it, and it still resonates with me.
And it's also a movie where nobody should give a crap that there's a twist in it.
No,
that's the biggest
twist
thing. People don't seem to like it.
The biggest twist in it mm-hmm. is so subtle
right.
that I figure most of those people don't even know it.
Well, it's,
and I figured out the twist, the big twist, I figured it out in the trailer.
Right. So.
You know, and it was not, it was just.
That's not
it's
the point
it's,
of
it's
the
about
movie.
As point, it's about as somewhat less point than finding out that Rosebud is a sled.
Right. It is.
I've ruined Citizen Kane for him.
So, that's what we liked.
Yes,
now
that was what we liked.
What
that
we
was what we
like.
Liked. Yes, the opposite of this. And, we have to do mine a little bit peculiarly, because I have that one extra award that you don't have.
Right.
Okay, well, we'll give it to the... We'll save it to a last.
Okay.
Okay, your 10th worst film.
Was Alpha and Omega, which was...
grim.
Really dumb... animated movie with talking wolves.
Talking wolves, okay. Seeing that's
if they're not going to spend a lot of money on animated movies, they just wouldn't bother.
Well, I think that's probably true. It would also help if they, had decent screenplays. Would help a whole lot.
What's your...
My 10th is the reboot of A Nightmare on Elm Street, which was probably the stupidest idea for it. A reboot of anything I have ever encountered. I have nothing against reimaginings, rebootings, or
remakes
of any kind. They don't harm the original, and this isn't harm the original either. But dear God, this was bad. And your number nine
was The Last Song. It has a lot of. It should probably be higher than nine.
It probably
honestly.
Should be, considering it's got Miley Cyrus in it, and it's based
Nicholas
on a Nicholas Sparks,
Sparks
book.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't
right
know
there.
Why this is this low.
Yeah, I don't know. It should be higher.
It should be like.
It should be
six,
higher
probably.
On the low scale.
But there's a lot of bad stuff up top. But I had forgotten I watched this movie. I don't remember much about it. I remember it was awful.
And it has Miley Cyrus and a raccoon.
Right, and the raccoon is a much better actor than she is.
This doesn't surprise me. I don't suppose there's any sort of, like, bestiality involving Miley Cyrus and the raccoon.
She does not smoke salvia and have sex with the raccoon. If that's what
well, yeah, I've lost all interest in seeing it now.
Number nine.
Number nine. Remember Me. You remember that?
Yes, I do now.
Yes, that's Robert Pattinson trying to be in a movie other than Twilight and failing miserably.
Which, the review, the stuff he said about it and why it was bad made me want to watch it. It sounded so awful.
It is. It's awful.
And
it
tasteless.
It is awful, and it is tasteless and laugh out loud funny in its tastelessness. But this does not mean I recommend anybody rush right out to it. What's your number eight?
MacGruber.
The problem with the 10 worst stuff is that, generally speaking, neither of us see what the other one sees.
Well, I can tell you about it.
I know.
If you give me a second.
Oh, shut up.
It's a quick 30-second SNL skit stretched to about an hour and a half.
That kind of says it all.
Just as stupid, yeah.
My number eight was Our Family Wedding, the highlight of which was a goat eating Forrest Whitaker's Viagra and becoming sexually aroused and pursuing people around the film.
Well, that's what you're into.
Hey, you know.
My number seven was Chain Letter. Really bad horror.
Wasn't that one of those Carmike exclusives?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. They have a knack for those.
It's like they made Saw dumber, and I didn't think that was possible. So it's commendable on that.
Hey, it's an accomplishment of some sort. I'm not sure what kind. Let's see, my number seven was The Bounty Hunter.
Right.
Now, if any genre has been killed this year, it is the romantic comedy. This is the one that perhaps takes a romantic comedy and drives a stake through its heart.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jennifer Aniston, whom I do not like, and Gerard Butler, whom I do like.
In a movie
they
don't like.
Need to be in this movie together, and the movie is horrible. The characters are unlikable. And there is no reason on God's earth you should ever see this movie.
Might be a Gerard Butler completist.
That means you have to sit through P.S. I Love You, too, which is Hilary Swank, a romantic comedy. I mean, if you've done that, you can sit through anything.
My number six.
Your number six.
This is the virginity hit. Which was the evolution of the mockumentary, I guess.
And here you briefly thought you were going to get out of this because nobody booked it at first.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
the Regal had it.
Brave, stupid theater.
Yeah. No, I just I forget I watch these movies. And so I went through, and I literally, when I
denial
saw this movie...
Denial is a helpful mechanism.
When I saw this movie, I think there was about five people in the theater when it started. By the time it was over, they were all gone. The only other person that was in there for more than 5 minutes was the usher, who decided to stand around and watch a scene with strippers.
What was that movie that we screened one night late at the Carmike, where we started out with an audience of about 12 people and ended up with three and one dog that had fallen asleep?
I don't remember.
It was... You know, the dog had the right idea.
I walked out of King Arthur one time.
King Arthur?
Arthur.
Yeah, King Arthur. That's the Cockney version.
What's your six?
My number six is Paranormal Activity 2.
I never watched it. I hated the first one.
If you hated the first one, this is like the first one, only more tedious.
So. That gets an honorable mention.
Yes.
Sight Unseen.
Okay, you're number five.
Sight Unseen, 10 worst.
Yes. Okay. Number five.
Sex and the City 2.
Yeah, and I actually saw that one.
Yeah. Which I looked up over my old list, and Sex and the City 1 was actually the second worst thing that year.
So does that mean this is improved, or the year
was
worse?
No, this is worse. You haven't heard the rest of them.
Oh, okay.
But this one doesn't even have an elaborate diarrhea joke, so I don't know how there's anything worthwhile about it.
Well, having sat through it, I'm not going to argue the point. You know, I watched both of those with you, so...
Very kind of
you. I know. I'm a kind person. My number five is a tie between Yogi Bear and Marmaduke.
Oh.
for most annoying, dumb, talking animal movies. And I give the edge slightly to Marmaduke because it wastes Lee Pace.
Okay.
The actors in Yogi Bear pretty much are getting what they deserve. So that's, you know, fine, but they're both pretty grim. You're number four.
Takers. It's that thing with Hayden Christensen where they...
Say no more.
It was him and Paul Walker.
It's getting better, huh?
Chris Brown, who's famous now for hitting women.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a tricky job. Somebody
Idris Elba makes the worst career decisions.
You saying it wasn't good?
No, it's awful.
Well, I didn't see it, and I don't plan on seeing it.
Good. You should. What's your number four?
My number four is very high on the tediometer. And that is, and I don't know how to say this because it always comes out a question, and that's, how do you know?
Well, there's no question.
But there's no question mark on the title.
Did it get it?
This is
higher
a barometer of, I think, the film's stupidity in that it does not even realize the title needs a question mark. This is boring, uninvolving, unfunny, unromantic, close to unwatchable. If I could have walked out, I would have. But being paid for this kind of crap, I sat through it manfully. Well, I sat through it. And your number three?
Was Insecure, which is another movie nobody saw.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the bow catcher for about a week?
I remember that, yeah.
I was trying really hard to be Tyler Perry, but with more murder, I guess, and domestic violence.
It's kind of hard to be more domestic
violence
than Tyler
Perry.
It was
more like off-putting. Like,
oh, okay.
But it's incredibly incompetent. Like, there was a part, there was early on where I thought it was going to be as purely awful and then therefore entertaining as The Room.
Uh-huh.
But then it just turned incompetent. And the guy, I forget the guy's name, and it might be the worst actor I've ever seen in anything.
Interesting. I'll avoid it. Which probably won't be very hard.
Yeah. See you encountering.
My number three is...
unless Mark decides to show it somewhere.
Oh, God. Is Furry Vengeance. Which, as I said in the paper, should have just been called 50 Ways to Humiliate Brendan Fraser. The only thing to say about this movie is if you are in that select group of people who want to see a raccoon take a piss in Brendan Fraser's mouth, this is your movie. I have nothing further
There's
to say.
Probably people that... It's the internet channel.
I'm sure that this news will get around to certain specialized websites, and that's not my problem.
My number two...
Your number two...
It's Flipped, which was the...
Oh, yes.
Rob Reiner's
yes.
latest.
Yes, I remember when that came out.
God, what a piece of crap. It's obnoxiously bad. This sort of schmaltzy look at middle America in the good old days. And
or in what somebody wants to paint as the good old days.
Made my teeth hurt.
Oh, well. It can.
Narration, the entire movie. It's the laziest script I've ever seen.
Well, I'm not...
Do you know how annoying that is?
I can imagine.
You should watch it.
No.
See.
No, I don't like Rob Reiner movies, and that's under the best of
this
circumstances.
Bad.
Okay.
Makes the bucket list look classy.
Oh, God. I had managed to block the bucket list from my mind.
Oh,
thank you for reminding me of it.
Number two.
Oh, my number two.
Cyrus.
And it's not, by any stretch of the imagination, the worst movie I saw this year. It, however, is the most annoying movie I saw this year.
Okay.
It is more mumblecore. Mumblecore is a movement in film that exists solely to give employment to people who have absolutely no talent whatsoever for making movies. It has probably done more damage to movies than the combined efforts of Michael Bay and Uwe Boll. It cannot go away fast enough for my taste.
You're assuming people are watching these movies. I don't really know.
Well, I mean, they keep turning the goddamn things out. Somebody must be watching them.
No. They just think it's going to catch on at some point.
Oh, well, I suppose that you may have a point.
It's not going to. Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess finally, number one, worst movie of the year.
And your worst movie of the year was?
Skyline. Which I still get
Alien
angry.
Vacuum cleaners from outer space.
I got, when the Broom View got that, I honestly got angry that they were giving people the opportunity to watch this stupid
movie. I'm sorry.
Dumb movie.
I've got Mike's cell phone number. You can, I can give it to you anytime. You can call him a bitch about this sort of thing.
We should get some sort of approval. We should get to veto one thing
A year.
Like, no, don't run
Don't run that. Yeah, okay. Well, my worst of the year was that 90-minute Tea Party commercial that didn't reveal itself as a Tea Party commercial until quite late in it. And this was a so-called documentary called I Want Your Money. Fortunately, the filmmaker got very little money because the day I saw it, there were two of us in there on passes and one presumably paying customer. It's an amazing collection of half-truths, untruths, a rewriting of history, and just the plain old false shuffle. It's also just incredibly inept. Fortunately, not even Tea Partiers would go to this movie. That should tell you something. And the coveted Pootie Tang Award for 2010. And I'm actually ashamed of this because, really, Pootie Tang is fucking Citizen Kane next to Vampires Suck. No more needs be said.
This Thursday.
At the Thursday Horror Picture Show, which is at?
Caroline Asheville.
That's right, in the Cinema Lounge at 8 p.m.
What a coincidence.
Wow. And if we just sat here, we wouldn't have to come back.
That's true.
I don't think I'm going to do that, though.
For you.
Yeah, well, that's possibly true since they're talking about snow tomorrow night. And I just don't need to hear that. But that's why I brought it with me in case.
But we're watching Shrunken Heads.
Shrunken Heads, Richard Elfman's film.
Danny's brother.
Danny's big brother. And Danny did write a theme for this.
You also might know Richard from
Forbidden Zone, which also has Danny in it as Satan. And for those of you who care about this sort of thing, there is a rumored Forbidden Zone 2.
Yes, I saw that.
In the works.
But you can come watch Shrunken Heads.
You can come watch Shrunken Heads, which is kind of hard to see apparently these days. But
Yes, exactly.
This is the point I wish to make fully. Is this is a very deranged, very specialized motion picture. It's kind of like a comic book come to life. It's more like a comic book movie than most comic book movies ever thought of being. And here's the thing. It's for specialized tastes. I won't deny this. However, if you come and you don't like it, you have only Justin Souther to blame because he tracked a copy of this down for me for Christmas. So you can take it out on him.
There's shrunken heads flying around.
That's right. And a hero who is a former member of the Tonton Macoute and is now a news vendor and part-time voodoo practitioner witch doctor in New York City.
Sounds amazing.
And an unrecognizable Meg Foster as a really butch lesbian crime boss named, wait for it, Big Mo. Are you getting the idea? Movies don't get better than this.
And then Asheville Film Society.
Which is also at the Carolina Inn Cinema Lounge.
Yes.
And it's next Tuesday.
Unfaithfully yours.
It's unfaithfully. I should hope you remember. You suggested it.
Yes.
You requested it.
Well, I felt like we needed some Preston Sturges.
Well, we do. And that's a good Preston Sturges to start with. I mean, granted, it lost a packet in 1948, but people didn't really understand black comedy very well in 1948.
And, so much of, like, the Coens have been influenced.
Well, the Coens are the only people who can write dialogue that's even remotely like Preston and Sturges these days, or maybe they're the only ones who try. I don't know, but it's an amazing combination of some of the most sophisticated dialogue and some of the most lowbrow slapstick you can imagine, and they're in one thing, and they all seem to work together. I mean, Sturges had this dictum that this like chart of things, like a puppy was better than a kitten, and a kiss was better than a hug, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And it ends with, and a pratfall is better than anything. So in his mind, you know, somebody falling down was always the capper for a gag. And as a result, you will watch people fall down a whole hell of a lot in Preston Sturges movies. In this one, you get to watch Rex Harrison fall down a lot and battle with the problem of trying to stand on cane-bottom chairs. So
I'm excited about both of these movies.
Yeah, well, so. You should be. You know, and you've seen one of them.
I know. So, and with that, I guess we're.
No.
I'm trying to get us out of here.
I know. Okay. So, opening this week.
I don't know. Country Strong.
Yes.
Looks stupid.
Looks really
What's
stupid.
What's next?
And what else is opening? Season of the Witch, starring Nicolas Cage in his
Which
new
Which looks
week.
Stupid, but might be awesome because it's got Nicolas Cage. I've gotten to the point where I appreciate.
Well, let me
Cage
put it to you this way. Now,
stupid.
Now, just answer this for me.
Yes.
When you think of 14th century knights, isn't Nicolas Cage the name that right. comes to your mind?
It makes me wish that Burton's Superman had come made.
Yeah.
So have you seen the photo of him dressed as Superman?
No.
You shouldn't.
And his hairpiece.
No, it's no hairpiece.
No hairpiece?
Well, he's got one, but it's not like a Superman hairpiece.
Nothing worth writing home about.
But... Yes.
Well, no. So that's it for this week's offerings.
Yeah.
Grim tidings of the typical beginning of the year in the dead of winter time. I guess that's it.
Yeah.
He's Justin Souther.
It's Ken Henke.
Yeah, last I looked.
And we're recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, we did have kind of a live studio audience.
And we're brought to you by...
The fine folks at the Mountain Express. Mm-hmm. And we are... Produced, cohered, and put up with by
Steve Shanafelt.
That's true. Whom, granted, we also put up with. So it's sort of a give and take situation. In any case, that is all we have to say for this week, and it was way too much.